You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. Ready-Made Resources has a limited number of PVS-30 night vision scopes for $4,700. These are the top-of-the-line night vision scopes used by the U.S. military, which normally sell for over $11,000. Turn your 12-hour rifle into a 24-hour rifle. Visit Ready-Made Resources to get your PVS-30 today. Trading Post in the Woods is ran by veteran crisis responders who know how important it is to be prepared. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits, preparedness and homesteading supplies, as well as skills training. Visit them online today at tradingpostinthewoods.com. Today's guest is post-apocalyptic survival fiction author Bobby Ackart. Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, thank you very much for having me on, and I look forward to talking with you.
Oh, absolutely. I've been wanting to get you on for a while now, and it's just, you get busy, but better late than never, right?
Well, I know that feeling. I used to be very well organized, and then I entered the world of writing, and I'm an outliner, and that kind of helps me. But my personal life seems to get pushed aside. So, the weeds start to take over and the garage needs to be cleaned out. And, when was the last time you took the car down to get the oil changed? And so all of that gets kicked away when you're buckled down behind your computer keyboard.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir. That's the same thing happens to me. I don't shave or shower. I eat. I always make time to eat. But, when you really get into a story, sometimes things get neglected for a while. Thanks to the families out there that stick by the writers, because I know that sometimes they might feel a little neglected. But to all of them, know that we still love you, and you're the reason that we're doing it. So now you're not just a fiction author, but you're a prepper also. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, I was a prepper and a fan of prepper fiction before I decided to jump into the world of writing and started prepping in earnest probably 6 to 7 years ago. I jumped out there and read everything I could find. Everybody starts probably with William Forston and One Second After, and then, you branch out from there. And I just ate up every single book I could find, and I'd make copious notes and say, honey, this is a great idea. And I'd go to Amazon or go into town and buy what we needed. And eventually felt like I was getting in pretty good shape. And the next step was just to go to the internet and read every article on a particular subject that I could find. And that's how we developed and got ready.
And I should mention that you've written some nonfiction as well. When we first booked you, I'd planned to talk about your Blackout series, and we're certainly going to get to that. And I think you've also got a new series coming out as well, so we'll have to talk about that as well. But you've got a nonfiction book, and it's on cyber warfare. And in the wake of the massive WannaCry ransomware outbreak, I'd be remiss if we didn't cover that very serious subject, hospitals.
Well, it is a very serious subject. And I tell you what I did. I developed freedompreppers.com several years ago and did it because I wanted to share all the information I had learned with others. And so I wrote articles and then eventually started writing articles for American Preppers Network. And in the process of doing that, I thought, if I could combine good quality prepper fiction and then provide a how-to guide in the nonfiction format that relates to my fiction series, then people could not only, get a picture of what a post-apocalyptic world would look like, but then they could also see that the threat is real. Fiction books that I write associated with it. And fair that you mentioned was the first nonfiction book I wrote in 2015, kind of a companion guide or came out of my Boston Brahmin series, which involved a devastating cyber attack. But I wanted to provide folks the background behind cyber warfare so that they could realize that the threat is real. And then I provide real world preparedness solutions at the end that not only apply to prepping in general, but also specifically to what, you know, a grid down scenario caused by a cyber attack. So that was the first book I wrote in the Prepping for Tomorrow series, and later followed up with EMP, Electromagnetic Pulse, and the third book in the series was called Economic Collapse, which I released last year, because, as you know, most of these collapse events, whether an EMP or a pandemic or a cyber attack, eventually results in economic and societal collapse. So I decided to write those three first, because that's what most of the visitors to freedompreppers.com were interested in talking about and seeing.
With the WannaCry ransomware, hospitals, shipping, banks, and communication companies around the globe were paralyzed by basically a piece of code which was generated using a template developed by your own CIA, or NSA, actually, I believe. And I have a feeling that you weren't surprised when you read the headlines, were you?
Well, two things about not being surprised. First off, in the Boston Brahmin series, I had a group of hackers called the Zero Day Gamers, and they actually created ransomware and insisted on being paid by Bitcoin, the exact same scenario. Now, they wrote their own code. They didn't, you know, pick it up through the NSA. But I wrote about this in Cyber Warfare as it related to Stuxnet. And you might remember the Stuxnet virus that to crash the Iranian nuclear program. And they began to knock it off, and other hackers around the world were using it and using it back against us. And, you know, I'm not going to try to get into this too deep, but the WannaCry virus that they're using is this ransomware was created by us as part of our cyber warfare program. And then, of course, it got out, and now it's being used against other nations. And many leaders around the world are saying that the United States bear some responsibility for what's going on with the WannaCry situation, simply because we created it and we didn't protect it from getting out, you know, into the hands of the wrong people.
Speculation in the intelligence community suggests that WannaCry may have originated in North Korea. Perhaps the ransomware side of the attack was designed to cover up the true motive. Could have been like a hitman that might steal a victim's wallet to make it look more like a low-level robbery than a professional hit. What do you think about that?
Well, that illustrates one of the biggest problems with cyber forensics, and that's called the problem of attribution. It's very difficult to point the finger of blame at a particular nation state or group of hackers when a cyber attack occurs, because, number one, they mask their trail very effectively by routing their, you know, ransomware, the WannaCry virus, through a number of servers all around the world. And secondly, it's not for sophisticated hackers to put in snippets of code in the ransomware to blame in a direction far away from where they are. So it's almost impossible to definitively state, you know, North Korea did it or Iran did it or some other, you know, rogue nation or group. But then there's the second aspect of this, and it's kind of the political side. It's a little bit conspiratorial, but, you know, the government is always at odds with North Korea over their nuclear program, and here lately the shooting of missiles, and it's been in the news virtually daily. And it'd be real easy for our government to point the finger of blame at North Korea because of the Sony Pictures hack in the past and current events, and use this as a false flag, if you will, to take action against North Korea by stating that North Korean code fingerprints are within the cyber attack.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proven to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on gold and silver. Check out Silver.com today. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPRECON for 5% off your order at campingsurvival.com. Of course, it was a group called the Shadow Brokers that obtained and published the stash of cyber tools developed by the NSA, and that included several zero-day exploit for which there's no security patches because they haven't been used yet. So places like Microsoft, they wouldn't know to patch it. I mean, I guess if the NSA wanted to, they could give up all the tools that were stolen, and then patches could be made for those. But by them not doing it, there's just multiple more vulnerabilities that are out there that we're just waiting for the next shoe to drop. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and the NSA, this is a terrible black eye for them, and especially in light of the fact that WannaCry was probably in essence stolen or put out there by somebody inside the government, whether it be a government employee or just a contractor, and whether they'll ever find a person is anyone's guess. I give the example of Unlock that you may have remembered a year or so ago, and the government insisted that Apple give them the ability to unlock iPhones after that shooting in California. Well, the same thing goes to the government. Now, you know, companies like Norton, Symantec, and Kaspersky and these others are saying, hey, give us the information so that we can protect computers worldwide against what you people have created. And, of course, the government's saying, no, we can't do that. So it goes both ways. So now, like you say, this could be dormant for a few days or for a week or two, until they're ready to release yet another ransomware attack, and they may now go for something bigger, like America's power grid.
Let's suppose the U.S. banking system was crippled like China's was by the WannaCry, and let's suppose the attack took down systems for several days. What do you think America would look like after 3 days with no ATMs, no cash withdrawals, and no credit cards? Because if the banks go down, credit cards are probably going down too.
It would look like the kind of books that you and I like to write. Chaos and pandemonium. See, here's the thing that you and I know and we've written about. The veneer of society, as they say, is very thin. And people get upset about the smallest things. It could be because their favorite television show got canceled, or because their favorite sports team lost a game, or the cable went out longer than they expected. And so they freak out and they get mad and they take it out on anybody they can. Imagine a country couldn't get access to their money. Not only would they get angry, but then they would lose confidence in the system. Bank's balance sheet, if the majority of American citizens decided to hold their cash at home rather than within the bank vaults, the banks would collapse because their balance sheet is based upon, you know, paper, how much have they loaned and how much stock they own and things like that. But their cash reserves are minuscule compared to what their assets are in their balance sheet.
The Shadow Brokers release was in 2016, so only about a year ago. Stuxnet, however, that goes back to 2010. So the template for the malicious code that can actually cause physical harm, as the Stuxnet virus did, that's still out there. We haven't really seen anything like Stuxnet yet. And do you think we're living on borrowed time until we see some type of malicious code that's causing physical harm to maybe power plants, maybe hydroelectric dams, maybe transformers, reducing stations, things of that nature?
Well, it's here's what's really frightening. The code may already exist, and it may have already infiltrated the networks of our critical infrastructure, just waiting for the right signal to be sent. And Stuxnet worked like that, when the government created it and what they had intended for it. And this, or some type of hybrid, code that's been written using WannaCry or Stuxnet may have been created just simply waiting for the right time for the hackers to activate it. You know, the Russians are notorious for this, that before they enter a country like Ukraine or Estonia or Georgia in the past, they will always initiate the fight with a cyber attack to bring down, you know, communication systems, to bring down government systems and also banking, to try to create chaos within the country and a lack of confidence in the people. And then they come in with the guns, and they use it all the time. And it could very well be that they're waiting, if they've ever so decided to attack America, they're just waiting for the right opportunity to, you know, initiate a cyber attack or to unleash this malware that's in worms, and these worms that are already in our systems. So we could have them within our critical infrastructure computer systems already, and we just don't know it. So yeah, it's something that hangs over our head. I think that finally the government is waking up to the threat. A lot of people have been talking about this for years, and this is why I consider cyber attacks one of the greatest threats our nation faces, because, it, as I wrote in the book, you know, without bombs or bullets or even sword fights, you know, they could bring us to our knees just simply with a few keystrokes.
And that's certainly what Ted Koppel has proposed in his Lights Out book. He thinks that the Iranians and then probably the Russians are both already in most of our critical infrastructure and could initiate an attack at the time of their choosing. Is that right?
Yeah, all day long, every minute of every day, there are groups that are either state-sponsored, patriotic groups, like the Chinese have a lot of these, who are attacking government computers in the United States just simply because they want to bring down the U.S. The Russians are notorious for that as well. And they conduct penetration testing or pen testing on our systems and servers constantly, looking for a vulnerability to be able to slip in. And rather than making themselves known once they have success, they may implant code waiting for the opportunity to activate that code when the time is right. And like I said, we may have there may be code already in our infrastructure that we don't even know about, waiting for these countries like Russia or China to activate them.
And as we discussed, the way Stuxnet operated is that it caused the centrifuges in the Iranian nuclear plants to spin out of control, and it caused the system operators to receive false messages telling them that everything was okay and that there was no need for them to take any action. Meanwhile, the system itself was melting down basically, and it was causing physical damage by spinning too fast or not spinning fast enough, and that can be replicated to, as we said, blow up transformers, shut down power plants. And the problem is, once all this is done, it's not just you reboot the system and turn it back on. All of that equipment's now scrap metal. So now you have to get all of these transformers, all these power plants, reducing stations would all have to be rebuilt. And we don't have all those spare parts laying around. And some of that stuff is, you know, even now has a 3 to 4 year lead time from the time you order something to you actually receive it. And it's all coming from overseas. A lot of it's coming from Germany and other countries. And so we could be decades to get those systems repaired if it were just the cyber attack alone and we didn't have to worry about a subsequent invasion. Is that right?
Exactly. I mean, if assuming that our allies didn't necessarily jump to assist us and hoping that the Russians didn't, you know, invade us from the north, from the Arctic bases that they have, or the Chinese didn't just come across the Pacific in their ships, we would still be faced with the challenge of replacing all of these critical parts, the computer systems, the transformers, each of which is site-specific. It's not a one-size-fits-all. You don't just get on the Internet and order a dozen transformers and say, send one to Wichita and another one to Chicago. Every one is specific for the location, and the same thing is true of the supervisory control and data acquisition systems, the SCADA systems. They're all designed for a particular utility and location. So yeah, it would take a long time. And if you follow what the EMP Commission report said and look at that as a guide, what a cyber attack would do is no different than what an EMP would do, and that's collapse our power grid. And according to the EMP Commission, within a year, 90% of Americans would be dead. And I think that's very possible, simply because we are so accustomed to this, you know, just-in-time grocery delivery and reliance upon others for things. Just very few people are truly self-reliant anymore. And those that are would have to be prepared for a lot of folks showing up at their doorstep looking for food and various stages of desperation. And it would take quite a while to repair it.
And the catalyst in your blackout series is a CME, but the end result's the same, right? It's violence, looting, starvation, and total meltdown, as you said, various stages of desperation. Talk to us a little bit about your blackout series. How many books are in that series?
The blackout series has 6 books. I launched initially 36 Hours, which is book 1, back in July last year. Devil's Homecoming, which is the 6th book in the series, was released in March, which completed the blackout series. And, you know, it was kind of patterned after the Carrington event that, you know, many folks know about. And it basically, it takes a massive solar flare that's happened before to the planet, and it gives us a direct hit. And we have a family from Nashville, the Ryman family, that they're not preppers. They don't even never even heard of the word. They have no idea what prepping entails, but they pick up on the fact that there's this massive sunspot rotating towards the Earth, and that the potential is there that it could unleash a massive solar storm that with a coronal mass ejection, which could hit our magnetosphere. And so they start scrambling to get ready. The husband is out of town, and the wife, you know, the Mrs. Ryman and her daughter are back in Nashville. And they just apply common sense and really a will to survive to prepare the best they can for what ends up happening. And that's a lights out scenario.
And then about how long does it take for civility to completely melt away in your series? Is it a matter of days or weeks?
You know, the way I envision it, and of course, a lot of it is dependent upon where you live. If you live in the country, you probably wouldn't experience much at first. It's an area in your typical suburb, subdivision, like the Rymans did in Nashville, down in the Belmead area of Nashville. At first, you would probably have people coming together. In my opinion, they would try to help one another. They would say, well, it's just a matter of time, so you'd have denial. And what I wrote in book 1 is I took the so-called 5 stages of grief, you know, that everybody talks about, and I applied it to the collapse event so that, you know, over time, people started to realize and reconcile themselves with the fact that the light is not going to, or the power is not going to come on for a long time. And so you had them working through the denial at first, and then they get angry. Then they start to try to, you know, negotiate with one another and, you know, you give me this and I'll give you that. But eventually people get desperate, when they accept the realities and they get desperate and desperate people will do desperate things. And I write about that, trying to use real world examples of, you know, a man who's trying to feed his children and he'll risk his life to try and steal from somebody else because his wife and kids are starving. And That's the real world, and this is why I prep, because, you know, I love my life, I love my wife and my English bulldogs, and I'll be doggone if I'm going to let some hacker or a solar flare or an EMP or any other thing take away what we have together.
That's the end of the first half of my interview with Bobby Ackart. Tune in next week for the rest of the show.
In the Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. Everett and Courtney Carl have survived the 7 seal judgments, which devastated the planet, but have their efforts to stay alive been in vain? The next series of judgments to fall upon the earth are known as the seven trumpets. Within this series of cataclysms is the earth's collision with a giant asteroid known as Wormwood. The comet will poison much of the planet's fresh water supplies, making survival nearly impossible. With each subsequent trumpet judgment, their odds of living grow slimmer. If Everett and Courtney are to survive, they'll need perseverance, faith, and a great outpouring of providence from the Almighty. Buy your copy of The Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.